Good morning, gentlemen. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Good morning, Dave. So my name's David Brown. I'm an architect at the Microsoft Technology Centre here in the UK.
I'm Neil Kidd. I'm also an architect at MTC.
So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what's going on this week.
Sure, Dave. So this week we are running the Azure Deep Dive session. This is a five-day workshop where we've invited a number of customers into the facility, and we've got four of our labs dedicated to working with these customers to take existing solutions or new solutions and put them onto the Azure platform.
And is this at an architectural level, or is it deep down code? Is it proof of concept? Tell us a little bit about what happens here.
It actually varies quite a lot. As I'm sure you're aware, there's a lot happening with Azure at the moment prior to the PDC. Some of our customers actually have a great level of depth already with Azure, and some have less of the depth at this time. What we're trying to make sure of is that each customer has the relevant level of support from the product group and from us, to actually enable them to be successful and have something working on the platform by the end of the week.
So you guys are okay if I bring the camera around during the week and perhaps catch up with a few of you and the customers and partners?
Look forward to it, Dave.
And well, we're in Microsoft's MTC Centre working with lots of partners this week and with Dave and Ryan, and we've been helping customers dig into Windows Azure. And we thought it'd be fun to try, because you guys have been doing this in lots of different places. It'd be fun to talk about what kind of apps are being built with Windows Azure right now. So who would like to start? Who's got a really juicy application?
So I'm happy to start talking about, I think, one of the major things that we've realized with working with the customers over the last few days is definitely the use of queues as a mechanism for kind of, you know, durable and reliable messaging between processes. So that's definitely one that not only before coming and working with customers here, but you know, we certainly use it internally in the product group to build out certain aspects of the platform. So I definitely think where you've got two processes communicating with each other in a way that you want, you know, either one to be able to fail and the whole system not fail, then leveraging the queues is a really good way to do
it. We've had a number of sort of on-premise architectures come into the rooms that should be using WCF, etc. And you've led them towards a queue-based architecture.
Right.
By sharing some of your own experiences for building actual Azure portal, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, internally, we've got a very strong mandate to do dog food and use you know, our platform in our own development. So you know, the way that the portal talks to the next layer, which does provisioning, and then through to the fabric, all use the queuing mechanism. Even our billing system is designed heavily around queues and the use of queues to support failover and redundancy. So, yeah, it's a pattern that we see lots, and it's a really good pattern as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we used to do a lot of work with MSMQ back in the day, and it's actually gone a bit quiet for a while, but I feel a renaissance of queuing in architecture.
Queuing's good.
Ryan, anything stick out for you when you mean something?
I think a lot of the customers that come in, you know, they're attracted to the elasticity, of course, for cloud computing. And so a lot of the applications we see are either they have peak loads or they want to do a whole bunch of work in parallel on some body of data, financial services, it could be renderings, it could be whatever it is. But we see that they want to design their application in a way that they can spin up a whole bunch of worker roles, do the work very quickly, and then scale them away, and they get the benefits of, you know, hey, we get this work done very quickly, kind of a cheaper cost point than having to run that infrastructure itself. But we see that consistently in the themes. People move to the cloud for various reasons, but elasticity is a big one. Infrastructure savings, of course, for other types of applications. And also, more and more people, I think, are looking at it as a point of reliability and fault tolerance, because the capabilities we have in Windows Azure in order to just detect failures and bring up new instances and the replication we do on the data, things like that, those are guarantees that a lot of folks just don't want to build themselves, not because they can't, but because it would be very expensive.
We've seen a variety of stuff coming through the labs this week. Some folks just play, and some folks really deeply, you know, embedding it into their architecture moving forward. What's some of the big bets that you've seen as in your travels with early adopters?
I definitely see you know, big bets in storage. I think, and to Ryan's point, the scale and the durability that you get using something like Windows Azure's storage services versus having to build that yourself, is immediately attractive to a lot of the organizations who, you know, they're starting with small data sets, but they definitely forecast a large data set in the future. And so, you know, having something that they can slowly grow that and know it's still, you know, it's replicated three times and it's highly available and, you know, and there's a fairly good strategy around it. And what's really interesting is you know, when we started the Windows Azure project, we were very focused on the web application ecosystem. And what's really been an eye-opener, especially over the last few days, is how many real, you know, the true S plus S solutions is actually being developed. And you've got, you know, safety systems that are talking to satellites that are relaying data down to the Windows
Mobile
Azure.
Mobile phones
that are integrating with it, you know, Windows CE devices, WPF applications. It's really sheeing home the fact that, you know, S plus S is not just a marketing term. It's actually being embodied in a lot of these solutions.
And they've been trying to use various bits as well, so not just SQL Azure, not just Windows Azure, not just ServiceWise, but some of those folks are trying to use all those things together.
It's exciting for the ISVs, and in particular the ones who have traditionally sold just a packaged, you know, I give you the disk, you install it on your hardware. What they've seen with the cloud and what we're doing in Windows Azure is like, hey, you know what, I can actually host this for my customer, and I can do it securely, I can do it cheaply, I don't have to build out the data center infrastructure, and it's actually opened a new business model. They never had that opportunity before. And so a ton of people that we see coming into these things, other than the scale-out folks, are like, hey, this is just a new business opportunity for me. I know 10 customers that they would buy my product if I just hosted for them, and this gives them that chance.
So we'll definitely get around to talking about what you do, but you've got quite an interesting role, because I sat and listened to you for the first time and thought, wow, it's incredibly technical. You're actually PM for billing, weren't you?
Yeah, so
you completely missed me.
So I'm a program manager, which means I work on a bunch of features in the product group. And yeah, I think the nature of most program managers is they've come from a fairly, you know, technical, generally a dev background. Certainly in Windows Azure, most of the program managers are ex-devs. And yeah, I think one of the beautiful things about being a program manager is you have access to every aspect. So even though I'm the PM for billing, you know, I own our billing feature, and I also own our infrastructure deployment aspects. You're inevitably working with the storage team closely, the fabric team, the DevX team. And so you kind of get a wide view of what's going on. And the other aspect is, you know, there are times when you're trying to solve problems or assist customers, you know, particularly online on the online threads. And the only way to do that is to actually crack open the code and have a look at, well, what is that error message and where is it actually coming from? Oh, it's that particular little problem. So,
are you presenting a PVC?
I am.
Is it a secret topic at PVC, or is it a topic that we actually know the name?
We know the name, but I don't know if it's been it's released. But it's
we call it a secret topic.
It's not so much a secret topic. It's introduction to Windows Azure. Okay. So it's it's one of the sessions that, you know, is focused on helping attendees who maybe haven't used Windows Azure before, or they've used it, you know, in a very kind of brief manner and want to kind of understand a little bit more of the background and context, and maybe understand how to build solutions based on some of the changes we're going to make, you know, for PVC. So.
We're working on a WPF-rich client app that is performing publishing to Azure. So in essence, we have a WPF client here, and we have a fairly large-scale back-end component, which the client generates a package for a book with a number of images and so forth on it. It will then request from a WCF service a ticket in order to publish that book. And once it gets the ticket, it starts to perform an upload using bits on the client. We have a bits handler sitting in the cloud that writes to blob storage so that we can get it later. As soon as a call's made into the WCF service, it is posting a message into an Azure queue. That's been picked up by a Windows workflow engine over here. That's using WCF send and receive activities. And is then orchestrating a number of service calls. So as the book package is uploaded, we notify the workflow that something has been completed. The workflow then picks it up. It is then orchestrating a service call up to a processing mechanism. The processors are essentially reading stuff out of blob storage. They are then pre-processing it. That might be extracting a number of images in a certain format, and then communicating with a book publisher, which is an actual physical book publisher. And these guys will take the images that were generated and print you a book. While this is happening, this is continuously sending state messages back to the workflow, and the workflow is updating the database. And the WPF client can query our front-end service here, and that will look in the database and return the current state of things. So the client has got a very good overview of how the current book publishing operation is going and so forth. We currently have this in premise, and we're just trying to move this over to Azure at the moment and seeing how that goes.
We're hoping to bring some customers that have got some very large data sets and some have some massive computing resources requirements to bring them across to the cloud. We need the ability to be able to scale from very small data sets to very large data sets. Bringing that to the Azure platform makes a lot of sense for us, especially if we have a lot of .NET code to do that with. As a result of the experience we had this week, we're hoping to go back and bring one of our first customers across and go live.
I've been working on the service management API and building an SNMP bridge to it, which allows us to list what's going on in the cloud, provision new instances, and determine exactly what we have running in the cloud via SNMP.
I'm Rob Blackwell, I'm R&D Director. I've been working on getting an SMTP server working in the cloud so that we can receive messages from the satellite gateway for our sea safety system. That's working fine, using some new features. And I've also managed to talk to the Windows Azure storage system.
Right, well, we've been working through some architectural diagrams and looking at some of the impact of that. And one of the things that's become apparent is there's been a number of recent updates to Azure that not everyone who's been attending the labs has necessarily been aware of, and they reflect, you know, ongoing changes. So perhaps, Ryan, you could chat a little about some of these new features.
Sure. One of the recent things that we've had is we've had the release of the Service Management API, which is a lot of folks have been asking for. It gives us a way to programmatically deploy, upgrade, and manage your applications and services running in Windows Azure. And those features are all exposed via a simple REST service, and we have some samples out there now. In fact, we have a command line client that you can use right now. You can script out and run away with it, and we also have a set of PowerShell commandlets. If you're a PowerShell junkie, you can just take this, and the nice thing about the PowerShell commandlets is pipeable, and you know, you get your service, and then you stop the service, and then you redeploy the service, and then you add the service, and it's all chained together.
People are going to love this, definitely.
Yeah. So that's one of the exciting new features, and I know there was a lot of interest in having this, you know, especially for build and build cycles where you're going to do continuous integration or you're going to do something like this, and that service management API really kind of makes it possible. See, some of the other features we had. Some changes to the blob storage, which is fantastic new features like shared access signatures and root containers. And the shared access signatures is probably one of the neater features that I've seen in a while. And it really what it does is it gives us a way to produce a URI or a URL for our customers without exposing the private key. Because the way we're set up right now is we have a symmetric key. And if I have a master key, it's my account, I don't want to give that to you.
If you lose that, then I would get full...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there are obviously many scenarios where I want to give you access to write or to read data that I don't want anyone else to access. So what I can do is I can create a signed URL, give that to you, and then you can do your normal REST operations, put, get whatever I assign to you, and it actually works. In fact, the signature itself is pretty simple. If you look at this, We have just a few parameters on the URL. We have a start, an ending time. So you need to specify how long is this thing.
Time bound?
Yeah, time bound. You put in a date in here somewhere.
Then we have a start time. So if you want, this is optional. If you don't specify this,
now would be a
now is when it starts. We have something called the signed permissions, which is really, do I want to give read access? Do I want to give write access? Delete access? Or if you're using a container, we have a list access. Then we have a signed resource parameter, which simply says, is this a container I'm giving you access to? Or is it a particular blob that I'm giving you access to? So it's a C or a B. And then we have another feature in here called assigned identifier. And this is an optional feature that's really quite powerful. Just with these features right here, you can create a one-time URI, and it'll have a lifetime of up to an hour. However, if you want to give somebody a URI that you can revoke at any time, you can actually apply a policy at the container level. So this, I can define a policy here with a signed identifier that says, well, look, I'm going to have an end date maybe 2 weeks from now. I'm only going to ever give read access, right, to this, and it's going to be at the container. I can assign that a policy and give it a name, my policy. Then what happens is I just give a URI, and the only thing I specify is, here's a URI for this container, apply my policy. And then when you access that resource, this policy applies. If this was the leak or somebody got a hold of it that I didn't want, I'd go in and I'd invalidate that policy, and the URI is instantly gone.
I could see that going down well.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. If you want to play around with this, actually, I do have a site out there called sharedaccess.cloudapp.net. And this will allow you to generate these signatures yourself, and you can kind of just play with it.
I've seen you demo that. It's a much easier way of doing it.
Pretty simple.
And the root bit? I've got a feeling I know what this is.
Yeah, so the root policy is, if you remember how our URIs are today, we have HTTP, we have your account, right? And then we have blob.core.windows, if I can spell, .net. And then we have a container over here. And this container is actually something that you need to specify. So, in this case, it would be like my container. Well, the problem is, if I want to put files into a container, which is how we do it in Windows Azure, you have to have a container to contain files. And I happen to want to host something like Silverlight, I need to have this my container actually associated to the root. So all this root feature does is it allows us to set up a specific special container that then acts as the root. And all it is if we rename or we create a container called $root, we can then address any resource in that directly from this base root. So
this is giving us control like we wouldn't have had up till now.
Right. So if I had my cross-domain policy, cross-domain XML, I could address it with HTTP, my account, blob.core.windows.net, $root, cross-domain XML, or all of this, and just cross-domain XML.
Cool.
Right? So this is how we can do that. This will actually get mapped into that container seamlessly for you. And it gives us a nice way to serve these files.
Okay, that's another way.
But it's important. This is just a container. It's only a special name that we have for it.
So what other features have come out recently?
So one of the features that hasn't come out but has been removed, and a lot of folks might have noticed, is the logging.
Ah, right, yes.
Okay, so we're out on the portal today. You might see that we turned off the logging feature. And the reason is we have another one coming. And we've kind of hinted about it a little bit on the portal and say, well, look, we've built a much more robust system that's going to come online here shortly. And it's going to allow you to do just your tracing and your debugging and everything using our provider. It's a trace listener that we've implemented, and we give you a lot of control over that. In addition to just your tracing and logging code, which, of course, a lot of people use, We'll do things like get access to any of the performance counters on the machine. And we can log that out.
We do know from the conversations we've had these last couple of days, getting some more detailed information to properly understand
exactly
how that's working was really high on people's list.
And it even gets better than that. We can grab arbitrary log files. So if you have an application that writes the log today and it just drops files on the machine, we can actually get those files and push them into blob storage for you, and you'll be able to pick them up. We also cover things like the event log. So if you have an app that's writing to the event log or anything like that, we'll monitor that event log. It will push that into your storage account for you. You'll be able to get it. It's really actually quite powerful. We've heard a lot of the people who have said, you know, hey, I need a better way to look at what my app is doing. And by the way, I don't want to change how it does things fundamentally, whether I'm running in Windows Azure or I'm running on premise.
That duality has been a common theme as
right.
well.
Right, and so this gives you the best of both worlds. Your app can write to the event log or write to logging, or however it normally does, and we pick it up and get it to you.
Cool.
Yeah. And then let's see, what are the last feature? We have, in-place upgrades. So we changed as part of that deployment where, you know, logging kind of went away, the current logging system, I should say. Around that time frame, we also released the ability to upgrade a role. And what this means is, prior to this, we had two environments. We had staging and production.
And that big switch you just
put big switch,
thing, yeah.
Right? But there's sometimes you have stateful resources that you don't want to flip to another. Like, you don't want to take away everything. You just want to do one thing. Or maybe you have 10 roles. You don't want to bring down every single role just to do an upgrade in one of the roles. So what we have is this in-place upgrade, which allows us to upgrade a specific role within your deployment. You can just say, here's my package, just upgrade that role, and we'll do that for you, which is pretty nice. And it also introduces the ability to do rolling upgrades. So we have this concept of upgrade domains, and they're specified basically slices of your application. If you have 10 instances and we have two upgrade domains, you
and
have
you're
five
responsible
in each.
As the architect for dividing the application up into those.
Well, you will be right today. We pick an arbitrary number of upgrade domains for you on your behalf. However, you can expect that you will be in control of how many upgrade domains you want. So once we have this and you do the rolling upgrade, we take down just enough of your app to do the upgrade, pull it out of the load balancer, and then upgrade it, drop it back in, and you have a chance to do some stuff before we hook you back up to the load balancer, and then we cycle through each one of them, right? And if something goes wrong, we roll it back. So that's the way the upgrade cycle works. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
We're looking at replacing one of our existing software components, servicing a number of items of our piece of software, with sync services, and then moving towards deployment in the cloud. We have a lot of multi-tenanted arrangements in there, so we're looking at Azure primarily from the point of reducing our cost base on hosting solutions. That's really what we're here doing this week, so we're working on the sync services to take out a lot of complicated technology. We've got a socket-based solution, it's quite sophisticated, it's quite difficult. The sync services is once you get it all going, it's a nice breeze, quite easy to do, so it reduces complexity, reduces cost of maintenance for us. Obviously, we're moving that towards going to the cloud so that we can reduce our, improve our hosted offerings to our customers and at a low cost price.
We've been looking into Azure for quite some time. We already have one application, one of our product working in Windows Azure. It was a good experience working with Azure so far. We had this application which is to resolve trade conflicts for financial firms, and it's a reasonable size application, and we decided to port into Windows Azure because of the availability and other kind of variety kind of reasons. And yeah, it was very easy to port. Within a few weeks we were able to make a standard ASP.NET based plus the SQL Server on the back end application, multi-tier kind of architecture, but simple. And yeah, we were able to port that application within a couple of weeks' time into Azure, SQL Azure at the back end. So it was very good success. And then we started working on Silverlight app for the same app. And we put a SQLite front end, and Rio service is using same business objects at the back end, same SQL Azure. And we have it working live, and we already have customers interested in it. So in we are looking for some of our big apps now to convert them into Windows Azure platform. And the key areas of interest and concerns for us has been the security and how the security will work. So we are trying to exploit the moment X509 security and trying to make that work. I'm working on the examples for that at the moment. So web security with X509 certificates, and then WCF. So we have lots of application written in WCF. So that's what we are looking to do, and we are working on examples. Hopefully by end of the week we'll get there and we will know better.
So looking forward, we're just a number of weeks away from the PDC, and I know we're going to be unveiling some new features. Perhaps you give us some hints based on our architectural discussions. Now, and I know one of them's come up a couple of times, the queue mechanism for having a loose coupling between the work and web roles, for example, is a standard pattern, and it works really, really well because it persists everything.
Right.
But there has been requests to say, could we have a bit more flexibility there? Are things be happening there?
Yeah, so certainly we've heard folks who are using the queues today, and as you said, it's a great pattern. It's an asynchronous pattern. It's reliable and durable, right? We don't lose messages. It's a great way to communicate between roles. There are some applications, however, that need some either to be faster between roles, or they don't care about the durability, or they have some pattern in mind that doesn't fit into that queuing model, in which case they've asked for basically synchronous communication. And that's one of the things that we've been looking at, and we've certainly been talking to customers about. So, we'll be doing some work around how we can enable those scenarios.
Now, picking up on that, we touched on roles there. Web role, work role, they're sort of in a way slightly arbitrary in the way we divide it up. There's some subtle differences.
Right.
But there's been obviously requests to, can we get other sorts of roles? Can we make it easier to template those? Is anything happening?
Well, yeah, so from the perspective of, if you look at the role as it's really Windows running your code, but we can do some things to make running certain types of code easier. So we can template things, or we can do some common patterns and make those easier. Yeah, you can imagine that we're looking at those scenarios where, like, hey, there's a certain type of website, or there's a certain type of service that people want to do commonly in Windows Azure. Why don't we just make a template or something that will enable that scenario? But in terms of like fundamental technology, how Windows Azure functions, no. I mean, the roles are the roles. It's at its core, it's Windows, so that works great.
Okay. The other big area, security. This whole bit of identity and federation,
right.
Certificates and all this sort of stuff. Is our story getting more crystal?
Yeah, we have right now, we have some guidance available on how to run Windows Identity Foundation in Windows Azure roles, so a way that you can hook up and consume claims within your Windows Azure application. And that guidance, as we get closer and closer to PDC and some of the things that we want to do in terms of tooling and making that easier start to appear, we'll update that guidance, and you can imagine that federation is top of mind for us in terms of how we connect our applications that are running on-premises and our applications running in the cloud and our applications talking to partners. And we know that identity story is very important. So you can be sure we've been looking at it and spending some cycles on making this work.
Yeah, I do appreciate the insight. Thank you.
No problem.
I'm curious to see what are... what is the best way to go about building our application in Azure? What is the changes we need to make in our architecture and design to make sure we get the most out of this new platform? We've moved forward a lot this week. We've managed to move most of our application onto the cloud already, as well as our data.
It's been a steep learning curve. We've found a few things that require us to go and do some in-depth thinking about our architecture and our current way we do things, which is going to have to change to fit more into the Azure model. But yeah, it's been good.
Which, of course, will give us a lot of benefits, and we have to kind of weight the benefits versus whatever issues we face or time that it takes to develop stuff. But overall, it has been a great learning experience.
Absolutely.
we can definitely see the potential in hosting our application on this platform. And most crucially, what is very clear to us now is what is the business benefit that our clients can get out of utilizing the cloud architecture.
Because the thinking is that we want to store a lot of historical data in our application, and if we will do that on our infrastructure, we have to do the significant investment, and we trying to cut down the cost and improve the ability to put more services as we grow or new customers will come on board. So the Azure is one way how to do that. We tested the Azure infrastructure. Our needs are quite high in terms of volume. We tested the Azure with volumes which can top up to 200 gigabytes per day, and volumes we want to store there. And it looks like from the first day it wouldn't be so easy to achieve, but at the end it looks like we can reach our goals and use the Azure for the things we want to build.
It's a huge positive and interesting. One thing for me is that I'm not seeing the people adopting Azure limited to any particular industry sector or any particular type of application. We've got a huge range of industry sectors, a huge range of types of applications that people put together. So that was a good thing.
We've also had a significant range in terms of where the businesses are. From we had startups and
who are looking
for the huge headroom and being able to grow from there, yeah. As well as people who have established products in the marketplace and are having some pay with those who are looking for greater scalability. But also better operational support for those scalability products as well.
That's a serious amount of data we're talking about.
A lot of customers are looking at the application.
And some of them seem to be sort of quite stuck in the old way of working, and some of them will be forward thinking.
I wouldn't like to say that about my customers.
And in terms of the data bit, because that one certainly I was in a couple of discussions over SQL Azure versus table storage and what's the right way. This is getting people doing anything.
And there's a lot of confusion, I think, around that. It's a classic landscape, is that the cloud solves its problems. What are your problems?
That cloudification stuff that we just put on the code.
Yeah. And there's also an aspect about SQL Azure, maybe the obvious choice for people in the SQL database. It's kind of the obvious and easy choice. But it might not be the best thing in terms of taking advantage of the cloud solution. And I think that there is now an opportunity to stand back and say, okay, if we're going to move to the cloud, what is the best architecture for us? Because there are some new options that actually give you things you've not had advantages to take before, such as the internet scale of the table storage, box storage can give you, versus quite a large scale of its fundamental relational databases.
So the way I'm seeing it is our trade-off in terms of development time. We're going to go to table storage and it's not sure. It's going to cost you a lot of need to compensate for back to the transactions.
Yeah,
but it's SQL Server has transactions.
It's a fantastic convenience that people got very used to.
Yeah, and take that away from what people feel comfortable about it, but it's not worth it to develop that and redesign our application.
We also have one customer this week who has in their SQL database, they have something like 50 tables or so, and it's very, again, very obvious in terms of seeing how that would work in SQL Azure. But in terms of taking that schema that they do have in the database and working out what to do in table storage, that's a challenge.
Because some people look at the table storage and say, this is CI something, it's like stepping back a decade and rethinking, but then I'm doing it because I get some reduced costs and I can take control of scalability, but it's going to be a rethink.
Yeah, and I think Neil's comment about that there is some code that needs to be written in some cases. One thing just seen this week, a few customers writing some actually very, very reusable and valuable bits of what I could call plumbing code that actually I'm sure will be made available far more widely as samples to allow people to get up to speed and adopt this stuff far more quickly than they could if they had to actually write everything.
Yeah, I hope you complex some of those places, yeah. Some of those things are like utilities to go, those will never go amiss and miss
them. One of the other things I think we've seen in a few customers as well is the whole standing back on our architecture and thinking about what we can change so that it can run either on-premise or in the cloud, depending on the use case or the customer, for example.
For us, that's having a single code base.
Exactly. And what we've seen is some great solutions to that, where
fundamentally all you're doing is changing a few things in your build scripts at the end of the day to actually deploy to a data center in the cloud versus an on-premise data center. So I think there's going to be a lot of valuable stuff coming out of early adopters in this area.
We've also seen that there's not necessarily one thing or the other. In the prior space, the idea about hosting, whether you host on-site or whether you host in the cloud. Service in some cases this week where it's the cloud capabilities are complementary and perhaps they're starting with smaller parts of their application suite and hosting those.
Does that help a lot of
Azure and then integrating those into the richer front ends that they already have deployed? So
I mean, that's great. It's not 100%. Not every aspect of these applications is to scale the money. No, what you can take with it is to scale the plan. That's very
good. Also, quite a lot of discussion about the costings because I've found so the architecture of money. And never fully separated. And you've got to think about some of these things as architecture influences probably vice versa.
I think it also speaks to some of the people that have had here this week, which has definitely been on the technical side. This is a technical deep dive session that we've been going through. And many of the cases that we're seeing is that we've proven some things in terms of the architecture. But that also comes with some numbers in terms of what it is going to cost on the Azure side. And that then has to go back to the business to make sure that this, the cost benefit is actually there from a TCO perspective.
Because we sort of have that discussion that an on-premise solution you tend to get optimized for your particular solution. You know, about the hardware, you mandate the, you know, the operational stuff. You're putting it up to the cloud, you're letting go and then you're letting some
true,
of that
true,
control.
But you're also getting the advantage of being able to maximize all these CPUs and spending very little time doing it. If you've got a series of machines where you're spending quite a large amount of money maintaining machines that are only at sort of 5-10% utilization, then there's a huge opportunity to actually leverage that and get some huge cost savings.
One of the things that is tough from a business side is with the move towards Azure, being able to count the number of servers or some of the amount of storage that you can use. There are some maths that you can run through to understand the food cost of the new hosting environment for your solution. Getting those numbers for your existing hosting solution is often really tough.
Yeah.
In terms of understanding exactly what machine you use, exactly what the operational
people
cost,
don't.
The power cost, etc.
You've got, well, we've already got the hardware, but then it's the people, the operational excellence, the backup, which people just assume is all for free, but it doesn't. It comes at some cost. And people try to work out now what that looks like.
I think there'll be more and more tooling available in the future. If you look back at what's happened with web applications in the past, proliferation of tools to measure what's actually going on in people's websites so they can actually performance optimize them. So this is something that happened typically pretty soon after a lot of people arrived in this episode. I think I'm pretty confident that tooling is going to be available in the future to help people make those decisions. Have a look at what the building system, the grand line, the rest of the area on that, bring down to that, you know, whether application is costing them money or anything to look at, it's worthwhile. But that's perhaps
at least you can work out for them and then once a year.
Yeah. So the same API stuff means that you can take a little control that some people haven't come across that.
Well, the other thing about Azure is if you get involved in the search of a level of users, it's not easy to fix the equipment for the search ability.
Yes.
Certainly from the startups that I've seen this week, then it's easy for them to understand that, look, if they have 100,000 users, that's okay, they can afford that, then it work. And if you get 2 million users, the numbers still work with that. You can see.
I think in general, startups absolutely love the idea of not having to get over the curves of the huge capital expenditure.
Yeah, that's scale fast, fail fast type one really works.
Exactly. Scale fast, succeed fast, which is perhaps a little better.
That would be a more positive scale. I think
that would sound better. Yeah.
The other fun bit, of course, has been access to pre-release code.
Absolutely.
Because obviously, BBC is just a couple of weeks away, we were able to give them stuff that. We still not publicly discussed yet, but they were able to give feedback and test out.
Yeah, one of the things that the MTC spends most of its time doing is giving people access to early bits, alpha beta stuff before it's available widely. And yeah, that's great for the customers, also great for the product groups because we've got that feedback loop to actually improve stuff before it gets released. So certainly I know that the product group that we're here got a lot of feedback that they're going to take back to their team.
I've got all this feedback, I've got code. The samples to actually run through some more detailed profiling and stuff.
It's great for the product team to be able to get all the real customer workflows, and to be able to take that away and know that, given that additional level of assurance, that as the platform comes around, that they test them.
Because it must be tough to try to invent scenarios that are real world representations.
You're always going to miss
it. That's it, whereas we go to the customer because we've tried this and we're having some difficulty. Can you have a look? And they've been able to take stuff away with them.
I think one of the was inspiring me to about this week, is that the company together in a group are solving slightly similar problems, and it's start to spark off each other. So one person has to be on here, one person can be on here. And I hope that the environment will correct that, which you is really much more productive.
Because this morning, they all did that walk through what they've done during the week, and the company sat here, it was nice to see. You know, some of the prompting discussions afterwards.
So this afternoon, there's kind of
code swaps
going on.
Yeah,
people realize that. People give this bit of IP, people give that bit of IP.
Business cards being exchanged and stuff like that because they realize that they're not alone out there developing this type of
stuff. And it's also great for the product if we get to hear the fact that three of the main customers, for example, are on them, same issue, or are all struggling and can address some of those things from BNC or whether it rolls into future product points. That's all good.
Yeah, it's good to get a look at that roadmap as well, some of the stuff that will be coming further down the line, because I think that gave the partners and customers, you know, a good insight and knowing that we are actually responding to those requests that have a roadmap beyond release.
There's nothing more frustrating than about spending 6 months building something and then discovering that actually it's not actually yet well done. Wasted that time, so giving the visibility of the
We never want people to be surprised by that sort of stuff.
Well, they've got legacy code there from day one, and in that case, it's
as you're kind of plotting the page, you're just kind of doing all the baseline features that people just should be able to pick up and just start running their apps straight on.
What we have also seen as well is we're not supplying some pieces of the platform. We've been able to highlight where there are opportunities in the platform to build those into the applications for themselves. So there are certain cases where it's not a showstopper, not being a particular feature, but the understanding that that's going to come down the line. But here's the other one you support for that, so you can easily build something, and when I speak, build something in the interim. Take advantage of that, knowing that this official piece is going to be the slides.
Because we have a roadmap and they have a roadmap, and you know, it's always, you know, they know what both of us look like. You can start synchronizing the releases or get the scores from that. So, I'm looking forward to seeing some of the final results and some of the ones that do go viral.
So, some of the game, I think they
I know, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
And some people will be putting their initial releases out in BBC time frame, so a matter of weeks. Other major releases will be around Christmas or very early in the year, because of maybe progress already. So there will be a number of customers who from this specific detail of going live with solutions in the very near future.
I think all the customers will be at least upset with the
monetization
out of our business. We've had customers here this week that are now with the other customers, but they'll be reporting their existing applications.
Because certainly that cloud stuff is the question is about should we move to the cloud, sort of almost evaporate in the sense the beginning the assumption is it's a good place to defer a wide variety of scenarios.
Yeah. Certainly from the format of this workshop perspective, I know one of the things that's been particularly valuable for the customers is to actually hear from the product group in terms of how things work under the covers. So a lot of the advantages of the cloud is that it's a black box. A lot of people, that's a good thing. And when you start trying to push what the cloud can do and actually really understand what the implications of changing something are on the solution, actually understanding under the covers how it really works.
I thought that was absolutely fascinating. The data centers and stuff like that. Just say the cloud.
Yeah.
And don't stop thinking actually we are building these things. There's a bunch of guys just responsible for making this thing spin.
So it's a good opportunity for people to find out a little bit more about what's actually going on in the data center.
Because the billing model makes sense once you understood how VMs were put together, and you looked at the unit of isolation, and the way those tenants were managed, and all this sort of thing. You realize how much is happening under the cover, it makes it much easier to do the planning and know what's going on.
And to understand some of the limitations that you can have, some of the opportunities that you do have. If you understand that, okay, this is exactly how we're moving from this side of the data center to the storage side. Understanding those kind of things is going to give you more insight.
A couple of those I haven't even thought about. The compute nodes and the storage nodes, they're different specs. Technically, you can do some different things and optimize for those scenarios. But you've got all that scheme, unfortunately. Unless you can more delve down on
which, for many people, is a great thing. But it's actually good to know that you can find out more about this stuff.
It's also a practical way of graphing people through the stroke, writing. So, when I saw people approach this week, the view that they wanted to learn about best practice. So, well, perhaps not finished yet. Nobody knows what the best practice is yet because we've got some ideas on how to use it. at least nothing to prove that the fact that you do performance testing is like, this is the best way for access to storage, but it's not done. But it also helps in terms of familiarity. And the fact that this is a Windows platform, and that you built your Windows application to use your local skills, and then you're able to transfer them into the cloud. And seeing some of the kind of underneath covers in terms of what is Windows actually, and seeing that, hey, it really is Windows.
Yeah.
And there's some great abstractions and a great programming format, but underneath the covers it's Windows. So a lot of the things like some of the body capabilities that you see in the screen,
oh, yeah.
It's good to see how some of those are.
And for me, one of the things that's fallen out of it as well is that, you know, we've been talking to customers for a number of years about the benefits of moving to certain types of architecture. So, you know, recently we've had a lot of discussions about, for example, claims-based authentication or, you know, the REST delivery. Now these are all coming out as the ways of doing things with Azure. And so actually, some of our customers have already made the investment to go that way. Actually, it's a very, very easy transition to get into the Azure cloud. Others need to stand back and think a little bit more about whether they want to adjust their architecture to make it a little bit easier. It is nice to see that there can be very small component changes in a well-abstracted architecture to make something fit very, very nicely.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have these people going live at launch time with their applications. It wouldn't be too big a jump.